On This Week in Enterprise Tech, we have Mr. Brian Chee, Mr. Curtis Franklin here today. Now, a lot of us use MSPs for information and communication services, but the NSA has some news for us. That's right, those services might be at high risk for cyber threats. We'll talk about why and just what you might do there. Plus, we had him on last year, but this time he's back to talk about the Pwn to Own event. And he might even share some not so well-known events or moments during that event. Our guest today is Mr. Dustin Chalice. He's communication manager for Trend Micro's Zero Day Initiative. And he's going to talk about the evolution of Pwn to Own and just what kind of things you can win there. Very interesting stuff. You definitely shouldn't miss it. Twiet on the set.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twiet, This Week in Enterprise Tech, episode 493, recorded May 13th, 2022. Known to Pwn. This episode of This Week in Enterprise Tech is brought to you by IT Pro TV. Give your team an engaging IT development platform to level up their skills. Volume discounts start at 5 seats. Go to itpro.tv/enterprise. Make sure to mention Enterprise 30 to your designated IT Pro TV account executive to get 30% off or more on a business plan. And by Intel, orchestrated by the experts at CDW, to deliver multi-layer security and remote manageability with the Intel vPro platform powered by 12th gen Intel Core processors. Learn more at cdw.com/intelclient. And by Bitwarden. Get the password manager that offers a robust and cost-effective solution that can drastically increase your chances of staying safe online. Get started with a free trial of a Teams or Enterprise plan, or get started for free across all devices as an individual user at bitwarden.com/twit. Welcome to Twiet, This Week in Enterprise Tech, the show that is dedicated to you, the enterprise professional, the IT pro, and that geek who just wants to know how this world's connected. I'm your host, Louis Maresca, your guide through the big world of the enterprise. But I can't guide you by myself. I need to bring in the professionals and the experts, starting with senior analyst at Omdia and security enterprise expert, Mr. Curtis Franklin. Curtis, it's reached that time of the year where people and organizations are panicking about the market. What do you think? Is it going to change the security landscape as well?
No. just to be brutally honest, here's what I think is going to happen. I think that people are going to take their eye off the ball a little bit up in the executive suites. That's going to put more of the onus on the people actually in the trenches getting things done, and they will end up having to do more with a little bit less until the attention comes back over to cybersecurity. But the world will keep turning, the bad guys will keep trying to get in, the good guys will keep them out, and we'll be back again next week to talk about the whole thing again.
That's right. Speaking of keeping the bad guys out, RSA is coming up in the beginning of June. According to Colbert, it's the place where people gather, talk, shop, and breed with each other. That's called exchanging private keys. Now, in all seriousness, are you ready for the Golden City?
I suppose I am. You can always tell that it's RSA time because the price of hotel rooms in San Francisco goes straight through the roof. They've done that, so we're ready. I'm going to be there and looking forward to getting together. I have had lots and lots of invitations for meetings. Most of them I won't be able to accept, but some I will, and I'm really looking forward to meeting with people face-to-face for the first time in a while.
Absolutely. Well, enjoy the trip for sure. Well, we also have to welcome back our architect at Sky Fiber and all-around techie, Mr. Brian Chee. Now, Cheebert, I hear you're taking baths with solar-heated water now.
Oh, yeah. It's made a big difference in how much energy my house uses. Previously, they redid the roof and then put new solar panel, photovoltaic panels on, but they didn't put my hot water panel up. As a result, I was using the backup electrical element on the solar water heater tank to heat my water. And now that it's back on, it has made upwards of 7 kilowatts of power usage per day. Pretty big difference. Sadly, I sent you the article from the Department of Energy, but the whole deal is solar hot water heating is not for everyone. You have to have lots of sun. So Hawaii and Florida and Arizona and Nevada and places like that would be spectacular. But sadly, you know, you use oil to heat your water, but a lot of people is, you know, mileage may vary. So hybrid hot water heaters have become very, very popular because it is a good solution that's kind of right in the middle ground. So I'm looking forward to that.
Now, I have a feeling eventually, if you could
Go ahead. Absolutely. Yeah.
Now, I was just saying, I have a feeling if you could power everything in your house with solar, you probably would. And I'm very jealous of that fact. So I wish I had more sun up here.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, I like spending as little money as possible. And when I get that check back from Duke Energy, I want it to be as big as possible.
Indeed. Always fun to get the checks. Well, folks, we should definitely get started because there's lots going on in the enterprise this week. Now, a lot of us use MSPs for information and communication services. Well, the NSA has some news for you. That's right. Those services might be at high risk for cyber threats. Now, we'll talk about why and what you might want to do. And for our guest today, we had him on back last year, but this time he's back to talk about Pwn to Own event. Now, he might even share some of those well-known moments, or not so well-known moments, that went on over the events over the years. We have back Dustin Chowles, Communication Manager for Trend Micro's Zero Day Initiative, to talk about Pwn to Own. So definitely stick around. Lots of fun stuff to talk about later. But first, there's lots going on around the enterprise. So let's jump into this week's news blips. Now, have you ever contemplated a couple times the data you're actually entering on the website forms? You know, which phone number should I use? Maybe I should use the other email address and Yahoo for use for spam. You might even have typed it a couple times before submitting the data you actually wanted to share. Now, what if I told you it doesn't matter? That's right. The information you entered even before you hit submit was already sent to the owner of the site. Now, new research shows that a surprising number of sites are actually collecting pre-submittal data. Now, before you hit the submit button, they captured all the entries and your mistakes that you put in the form. In fact, a research group surveyed the top 100,000 websites out there. And what they found was if you were in the EU, an EU user accessing a US site, over 1,844 of them gathered data like users' email addresses without the consent of the user. Very interesting there. Now, what if you were a US user accessing the same sites, 2,590 of them actually logged data. Now, you might be asking yourself, why in the world does the site need this information? Now, the first thing that was noticed was that most of the sites, it wasn't the site code at all that was doing this. In fact, it was a third-party marketing and analytics service, like something they've added to their website. Now, why marketing firms need keyloggers for erroneous data is beyond me, but the amount of semantic analysis required to make sense out of this data is actually very heavy, and you aren't going to guarantee really any value out of it. Now, the question is, why take the risk? Now, in addition to this data, the group also discovered Meta Pixel and TikTok Pixel, invisible marketing trackers. They are services embedded on websites to track users across the web and show them ads that are supposedly relevant to them. Now, researchers found that these tracking pixels were grabbing hashed email addresses before submitting. Now, for US users, 8,438 sites may have been leaking data to Meta, Facebook's parent company, through pixels, and 10,379 sites may have impacted EU users. Now, for TikTok Pixel, that's 154 sites for US users and 147 sites for EU users. Now, makes you start to wonder a bit about whether you should be entering that data at all on these sites. Now, biometric identity services look pretty good right about now. Unfortunately, that doesn't stop the site from, still sharing the data with third-party services. Now, I guess it goes to show you having a honeypot of information instead of real data might make this go smoother for people and organizations in the future. That's what PO boxes are used for, aren't they?
Well, organizations are filling enterprise data lakes to feed artificial intelligence, machine learning, and the rest of the intelligent machine technologies. But these lakes are vulnerable to exploitation, to a vulnerability brought to you by Log4Shell. Researchers at Zectonal are reporting that the Log4Shell bug can be triggered after it is brought into a target data lake through a data pipeline, since doing so bypasses conventional safeguards, things like application firewalls and data scanning devices. The attack requires a single line of text that can be embedded inside a malicious big data file payload to open up a shell inside the data lake, and from there initiate the data poisoning attack. If the targeted organization encrypts or compresses the data for, well, you know, security, detecting the vicious string becomes that much more difficult. Difficulty is all on the side of the defender, since one of this attack vector's attributes is that it's so very simple to execute with readily available open source software and libraries. All it really takes is access to the source from which the data will be delivered. Good news is that most aspects of the vulnerability have been patched and an exploit has not been seen in the wild. Bad news? There are millions of copies of unpatched versions of Log4Shell out in the wild, and the nature of the vulnerability makes discovery of additional similar vulnerabilities highly likely. Seems like we're going to be keeping our eyes on Log4Shell for some time to come.
Well, I've got a dark reading article that I'd like to share. I'll strongly encourage you to read the full article. But hey, face it, people like remote work. And if anything, the pandemic has punctuated this in spades. A recent Gallup study showed that 91% of Americans working remotely hope to continue working from home after the pandemic. Egress also had a research project, and they're saying 77% of IT leaders said they have seen an increase in security compromises since going remote 2 years ago. Well, I'm just going to read off the six major issues that the article points out. The first one they're talking about is internet connectivity. They list the threat as using a less secure internet connection. They're suggesting as a solution to use MFA or use a VPN. The second one is anomaly detection, where the threat is you can't monitor the endpoints very well. Solution, make it easy to report incidents. I'm kind of wishy-washy on that solution, but hey, that's all right. The third one is communications and shadow IT, outside chat channels. Solution, go to a secure chat. Fourth one is location of the data, where unsecured files are the problem. They're saying encrypt your data. The fifth is bad security habits, where risky behavior is the issue. And they're saying, no, you need more training and you need to be at very least using password credential managers. The last but not least is phishing emails are on the rise. It's harder to verify phishing attempts. And their solution, like we have been saying for God knows how long, is zero trust. Well, we're going to sound like a broken record. We've been saying these things for quite a while, but I'm going to add that we must stop using El Cheapo home routers and get remote workers to use enterprise-grade equipment that at least stands a chance at protecting and separating work from home. Personally, I think Meraki and others are on the right track of offering smaller routers and wireless devices that are managed by a central IT and by default separate work from home. The days of thinking a $65 router is enough needs to stop.
In 2021, there was a rumor that Apple was adding satellite-enabled communication capabilities to its devices. Now, that didn't get too far before the tech world was distracted by other things. Well, this past week, another rumor has started that makes last year's closer to reality. According to the satellite operator Globalstar, they have signed an agreement with a, quote, large global customer to build out a new communication network. Now, the deal is just months after announcing an unidentified potential customer had put up more than $300 million in finance to purchase of 13 new satellites. In fact, Globalstar says it's been working with this customer since 2020 in connection with the assessment of the potential service utilization utilizing certain parts of their assets and capacity. And the news brings up several questions for me. The first one being, why Globalstar? They're not the most successful satellite company out there. In fact, they've lost over $1.5 billion in the last decade, with its stock trading just around a dollar per share. Now, what it does have is that it seems like the deal kicker is the fact that they have a license to operate on a valuable chunk of the spectrum. Next, why does Apple need such a network and technology? Now, the first thought here is because most populated areas have reliable cell coverage, satellite connectivity could be helpful in rural areas or while traveling. That means Apple can tap into that untapped market. Now, if all of this is real, Globalstar might have a savior in the mist and a fairy godmother to bring them back from the poorhouse. Well, folks, that does it for the blips. Next up, the bites. But before we get to the bites, we do have to thank a really great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's IT Pro TV. Now, your IT team needs the skills and knowledge to ensure your business is a success. And with IT Pro TV, more than 80% of its users who start a video actually finish it. Now, IT Pro TV is engaging, and your team will enjoy learning on their platform. Give your team the tools they need to make your business thrive. Now, courses are entertaining and binge-worthy, keeping your team interested and vested in learning. Now, the tech industry is evolving all the time, changing rapidly, and your team needs to be trained today. When a new software release, system upgrade, or cyber threat faces your business, IT Pro TV offers the training and perspectives of those disruptions within days, if not hours. Now, why is IT Pro TV right for your business? Well, get all training and certifications for your team done all in one place. IT Pro TV has every vendor and skill you need for your IT team training. Now, they provide Microsoft IT training. They have Cisco training, Linux training, Apple training, security, and cloud, and a lot more. More than 5,800 hours worth ranging from technical skills to compliance soft skills. Now, you can do so much with IT Pro TV business plans. In fact, track your team's results, manage your seats, assign unassigned team members, and access monthly usage reports. You can even see metrics like logins, viewing time, tracks completed, and a lot more data there. Plus, easily manage your teams. You can manage subsets of users or teams by providing them with customized assessments, monitoring progress, and reporting on usage of the platform. Assignments can be full courses and even individual episodes within those courses. Now, advanced reporting can get immediate insights into your team's viewing patterns and progress over any period of time with visual reports. Don't forget that IT Pro TV has individual plans as well. Give your team the IT development platform they need to level up their skills while enjoying the journey. For teams of 2 to 1,000, volume discounts start at 5 seats. Go to itpro.tv/enterprise. Make sure to mention Enterprise 30 to your designated IT Pro TV account executive to get 30% off or more on a business plan. And we thank IT Pro TV for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's now time for the bites. Now, the news this week, we have some great news, not so great news out there, actually. The NSA is now warning that managed service providers are actually primed targets for cyber attacks of the worst kind. In fact, they're referencing the everyday cyber criminals, of course, those guys out there, and the state-sponsored threat actors as well. Now, a lot of you may have already been using MSPs out there to provide information and communication services to you and your organization. Now, there's some good news here. The NSA and input from the cybersecurity leaders from Australia, Canada, New Zealand, the UK, and the US provided some recommendations to actually improve the situation here. Now, here's some of the items on the list. Number one, audit and disable dormant accounts. So not only will this help you block those sleepers that are out there, but it'll also ensure that rogue employees or admins can actually wreak havoc out there. Now, the next thing is implement and enforce MFA. Now, we may have heard this stat before. We've talked a lot about MFA on this show, that you can actually reduce the risk of being compromised by 99% by using MFA. So that makes sense. Now, ensure, next one is ensure contracts are clearly defined to identify the owner who's accountable for securing the data. That one's the pretty interesting one. I'm actually kind of confused by that one. So I want to throw this to Curtis first, because if I remember correctly, the last one there is something you mentioned in the past. And when you mentioned it, it made more sense. Well, now, when it comes to MSPs, they handle sensitive data streams as well. Shouldn't it mean that they, too, are accountable for the data?
Well, yes, but it gets to the idea of shared responsibility. Now, shared responsibility is a formal concept that started out with the people who are colo people who are providing bare metal on which you can run your operating system and your applications. And basically, at that point, shared responsibility became that the provider was responsible for securing the metal. They were securing the systems. The stuff that you brought to the table, the applications and the operating systems, and of course the data, you were responsible for securing. So this expands on that. And if you want to look at it, it's basically the pieces that the MSP controls, which would largely be the application, perhaps some sort of data handling, all of that, they are responsible for, which means that they're responsible for securing the application. The data that's coming in and the storage of the data after it passes through would be the customer's responsibility, or perhaps the responsibility of a different service provider. Now, in today's cloud world, figuring out who's responsible for security at each stage of the application and data processing chain can be its own career. But it's something that has to be figured out and has to be very tightly specified in things like contracts, so that should a breach occur, then everyone knows who's responsible for taking care of not only patching it, but remediating the effects of the breach. This is going to be one of those things that ends up looking a lot like the chain of responsibility for a credit card transaction. Many years ago, I was involved in testing some credit card approval systems. And going through the documents that govern Visa and MasterCard, you see at every stage of the transaction, someone has financial responsibility for that transaction. And the responsibility moves along the chain, along with the dollar amount of the transaction. We're going to be seeing the same sort of thing as involves data in service provider environments. Follow every stage, see where it goes, and know who's responsible. Then make sure there's the documentation to back up that they are, in fact, responsible when the data is under their authority.
Makes sense. Makes sense. Well, Chief, but I want to throw this over to you because this list seems like something that's not new to us, right?
Oh, it's a broken record. In fact, Kurt and I spent an entire chapter on this in our book. You're going to base your business on this X. And you're going to be spending money and you're risking money because it's your business. Don't you think you ought to actually read the service level agreements or read the end user license agreements? They are, in a case of an MFA, almost the same thing. And if you're one of these execs that just goes, oh, yeah, it's boilerplate, click, go. No. Come on, guys. Have your legal counsel review them. Just because it reads, 90% boilerplate doesn't mean there's 10% that's an add-on that leaves you holding the bag if something happens. Take a look at it. Even if you don't hire a lawyer or have a legal counsel go over it, read it. Take the time. Almost all of these guys allow you to download the agreement so that you can look at it. I actually do way better reviewing contracts and such on paper. Call me a dinosaur, but that way I can get out my highlighter and I go and highlight the sections that I'm not quite sure of, and I'll call them on the carpet. I've done several service level agreements where I said, okay, first off, you guys can't spell. Second off, what do you mean by section such and such and such and such? I'd like clarification. If they have a decent amount of staff, they probably really like having people call out their mistakes. Or if there's something that is really unclear or ambiguous, they want to know about it. So I'm saying just spend a little bit of time. If you're going to spend a lot of money, spend a lot of time. Review those service level agreements, review those end user license agreements, and make sure you are signing the contract you think you're signing.
Got to make sure you're following the contract, that's for sure. Now, Curtis, I want to throw this back to you because just as Cheever pointed out, these are things, they're not uncommon. These are not uncommon recommendations. What makes MSPs so special here? Like, why are they targeting, well, first, why are they targeting MSPs? And the second question is, shouldn't these lists of things be applied to all cloud services and service providers they use?
Well, let me answer that in several stages. First, why are they targeting MSPs? Because so many companies have gone to MSPs for various services, because MSPs are now part of the application delivery infrastructure in so many organizations, and because so many of these MSPs are not as security conscious, and conversely, their customers are not as conscious of the security involving them as they might be with a traditional cloud provider. Now, how are they different? It's in the name. They're providing a service. They're not providing storage. They're not providing hardware. They're not providing a server. Providing a service. And the idea is that this is lightweight. It's agile. It is all the things you want computing to be in 2022. The question is whether it's also secure. And many of these MSPs are, in fact, fairly secure. Also, remember that every time you have data that goes from one service to another, you have a joint, you have a connection. And those joints and connections tend to be weak spots, whether you're talking about a chain, an automobile, or an application. Now, as for what's being suggested, it is one of these things where it seems like they should just have this recording that says, you know, all that security stuff we've been saying for the last decade, well, this time we really, truly mean it, because that's what it is. There's nothing here that's new. There's nothing here that shouldn't be already happening at every stage of the application, but somehow we need to talk to it again and again and again. It's right up there with, you know, look both ways before you cross the street and cross at a crosswalk. We hear all this, we know it, and yet people are run over each and every day around the country. Pay attention. It does indeed matter.
It does matter. It does matter. You're right. Thank you, Curtis. Well, I say that does it for that bite because we want to get to the guests and bring some knowledge to the Twilight Ride. But before we do have to thank another great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's Intel, orchestrated by the experts at CDW. Now, in today's bumpy hybrid world, the knowledgeable people at CDW really get what it takes to keep your business productive and protected. They understand that while your needs may change, securing your hybrid workforce never will. That's why CDW works with Intel and can help design a secure remote management solution that works for you. Now, with Intel's vPro platform powered by 12th gen Intel Core processors and custom configured by CDW, you get hardware-based multi-layer security that will protect against threats. But Intel's vPro platform doesn't stop there. It gives you peace of mind for your business and business class performance all in one. Now let's talk remote manageability. No matter where your hybrid workforce is working, management can access control and fix devices from anywhere, even outside the firewall, which means no matter where your teams are working from, you're still in control. And when you're in control, you can relax, because with Intel's vPro platform powered by 12th gen Intel Core processors, your teams will be more productive and power through disruptions, letting you and your business focus on other things. For secure remote management and security, trust Intel vPro and IT orchestration by CDW. People who get it. Learn more at cdw.com/intelclient. And we thank CDW for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's my favorite part of the show. We actually get to bring in a guest to drop some knowledge on the Twilight Riot. And today we have back Mr. Dustin Childs. He's Communication Manager for Trend Micro's ZDI. Welcome back, Dustin. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me back.
Now, you were on last year, and your journey through tech has been very interesting. And I would love to actually have you tell the audience a little bit more about it, because, you know, I think it was a pretty good journey and what brought you to Trend Micro. So can you maybe take us through that journey again?
Sure. So it really has been a journey. And for me in InfoSec, it started back in the late 90s, in 1997 to be exact, when I was assigned to the Air Force Computer Emergency Response Team. So that was really the beginning of intrusion detection. And it was really primitive back then. Lots of learnings, lots of log nights, trying to just figure things out. And we got excited when we called a port scan. That definitely started my career in 2008. Then I went and joined Microsoft and was part of the Patch Tuesday through Microsoft Security Response Center. And then in 2015, I joined the Zero Day Initiative, which was then acquired by Trend Micro. And I've been working with them ever since. And it's been great because at Microsoft, I got to patch stuff. But now at ZDI, I get to see the stuff that comes in and send it off to be patched. And I got to tell you, it's a little bit easier on this side than it is on the other side when it comes to servicing.
I bet. Yeah, in fact, this past week was just Patch Tuesday. Lots of fun stuff inside there. So I can definitely remember
Absolutely.
That for sure. Yeah. So I'd say let's jump right into to talk about PwnOwn, because I think it's a very interesting event. Mm-hmm. And it's grown quite a bit over the years. Can you take us through maybe its evolution?
Sure. PwnOwn actually started back in 2007. So we're celebrating our 15th anniversary this year, which we're really excited about. But it, like you said, it really has gone through a huge evolution. In 2007, the security landscape was very different. And you know, Macs were thought of very differently than PCs, but people in the security industry kind of knew a little better. So the conference organizer of CANSEC West, which occurs in Vancouver, had a MacBook, and he said, I'm going to put this MacBook on the conference network. And if you can pwn it, meaning if you can hack it, you can own it. And ZDI, do you want to buy the bug? And we said, yeah, we'll pay $10,000 for it. And that was the genesis of PwnOwn. And it expanded over the years. First of all, becoming primarily a web browser focused contest in our first few years, but then adding a second event where we focused on mobile and consumer devices, and then expanding even further. So we add enterprise software. We have enterprise communications now. And in 2019, we even added an automotive category partnering with Tesla. We awarded a Tesla. And right now we have two registrations for Tesla attempts next week. So we're very excited about that. But going from just one little MacBook and one QuickTime bug at $10,000, last year we awarded almost $2.5 million over the various contests and saw some amazing research demonstrated across a bunch of different targets. So it really has grown, and we're thrilled to be celebrating our 15th anniversary this year.
It's amazing. So you're saying that a Mac, though, actually hacking a MacBook was the genesis of PwnOwn. That's pretty interesting. Now, you said that since 2007, that's a pretty long time ago. I'm sure there's probably a lot of memorable moments that went on during this event. Are you able to share any of them?
Sure. So especially from my perspective, seeing some of the great research come in is very memorable, but also some of the ones that failed for odd reasons. One of the ones that failed that always sticks out to me, the researcher who wrote the exploit wasn't able to come to Vancouver. So they were communicating with the rest of the team via phone and via chat. And they had an exploit for Windows where they were exploiting the virtual keyboard that pulls up on the screen. Now, the problem was they had wrote the exploit on one resolution of a monitor, and the laptop they were trying to demonstrate it on was a different resolution. So their exploit was all ready to go, and all they had to do was get the cursor to the enter button on screen and hit enter. But because the resolution was different, couldn't get the XY coordinates figured out. So they were desperately trying to get the XY coordinates figured out, and they didn't get it working in time. Another one where I talked to one of the contestants and I'm like, well, how long did it take you to write the sandbox escape? And he said, I wrote it on the plane right over here from Korea, which is astonishing that he was able to do that. Another one was when something failed the first time, because you get three attempts at Pwn to Own. Someone on stage was debugging their program and writing the corrections. And if you've ever seen me type in front of a crowd, I can't even like spell the basics. And they were actually debugging live on stage on, you know, under the clock. So that was pretty impressive too. And then some of the fantastic exploits, the virtualization bugs going from guest to host OSs. Last year we saw Zoom and Teams exploited. That was pretty good. We've seen a bunch of SCADA bugs since we started Pwn to Own Miami. We've just seen some huge, huge, really impactful stuff come through the program. And it's just exciting to kind of stand by and watch it happen, which is pretty much my role. I just stand there and let the smart folks do their business. But it's been really great.
Oh, sounds like a lot of fun. I definitely get the keyboard stage fright thing. Somebody could just be in the room and I freak out. So I can definitely get, I don't know how they would actually debug in front of people. Now, you talked a lot about the evolution of the event, but I'm actually interested in just how the event has maybe impacted the industry. How has it made a difference?
Well, Pwn to Own has really impacted a lot of things in the industry over the years, because if nothing else, it's demonstrated how things can be exploited. So it used to be a yearly check-in with especially web browsers at the beginning. And the browser manufacturers were able to add defense in depth measures, things like DEP and ASLR and MIMGC and those types of things. Some of the genesis of it came through Pwn to Own. So we were able to demonstrate to the various vendors, here's how your product can be exploited. And they are able to take that back and then go engineer solutions to make that harder and harder and harder. And over the years, things definitely have gotten a lot harder to exploit. And the challenge has really ratcheted up. It used to be just like one bug. You could take over a whole system. Now it takes a chain of bugs usually to take over a system. And that just shows how difficult it has become. You can't just have one bug. You've got to have multiple things working in concert. And that really makes it more difficult, because each one of those has potential failures. So the fact that we were able to encourage the industry to look at different things and say, here's how you can improve. It's been really useful, and it really has, I hope, in my opinion, you know, improve security over the years by, if nothing else, giving vendors the opportunity to go back to their management and go, see, we told you, you have to do these security updates. And we've heard that from some of the vendors who participate as well. So that's great feedback from them.
Now, I'm sure one of the driving forces about being involved here is probably the winnings that you get from this. Now, it's not just limited to the 10K that you mentioned before from 2007. What's kind of entailed in some of this? What do people get?
Well, this year's next year, the prizes range from $40,000 up to, well, if you were to hit the highest level of the Tesla event, that would be $600,000. But really, it's going to be in the $40,000 to $100,000 range. We have a few teams attempts. Those are going to be $150,000 each. There's a lot of money on the line. I mean, we're probably going to hit over $1 million awarded next week. And of course, you get the hardware too. So when we say that Pwn to Own still is in effect, so when you pwn it, you do own it. And we have systems ready to hand to these researchers once they exploit it. So Macs and PCs ready to go to them. So you get the laptop you exploit, and then a significant amount of cash. And we've also heard a lot of folks really want that title of Pwn to Own winner. Right. So it definitely is something that they desire.
All right, bragging rights for sure. So, you know, you talked a little bit about the, you know, obviously how this has changed the industry from the prosumer side, from the pro side, the industry side. You know, I'm actually pretty interested on how this is maybe even benefiting consumers as well.
Well, for consumers, one of the things that we've done over the years is we've introduced a consumer-focused Pwn to Own. So it used to be mobile Pwn to Own, where it focused just on phones. But we've expanded it over years to include small routers, small and medium-sized business routers, like you were talking about earlier, as well as televisions, smart speakers, and even printers in this last contest that we had. So those devices that consumers depend on and people who work from their home office depend on are now also being put under the same conditions that the enterprise stuff, the Windows, the Mac OS, the Chrome, the Safari. So they're getting the same stresses that the enterprise stuff is. So we're hoping to improve the consumer grade stuff as well through that same sort of thing. And it was really our last consumer focused event was really eye opening because it showed, for one, that TVs are very insecure, but also that printers are relatively insecure and are ripe for exploits to take place. We had one exploit where they exploited a printer and had it play AC/DC, which was really astonishing because I didn't know printers had speakers, much less could be turned into jukeboxes. But it's pretty cool.
Very cool, very cool. Well, folks, we have a lot more to talk about here. And in fact, I want to bring my co-host back in because they are chomping at the bit here to ask some questions. But before we do, we do have to thank another great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's Bitwarden. Now, we talk a lot about cyber threats on this show and even on this network, and a lot of them are exploits because of passwords, and it comes up often in the news. Now, one way to increase your security posture is to use a password manager. That's right. Bitwarden is the only open source cross-platform password manager that can be used at home, at work, or on the go, and is trusted by millions of people. Now, with Bitwarden, you can securely store credentials across personal and business worlds. Every Bitwarden account begins with the creation of a personal vault. Now, Bitwarden just added their username generator to the password generator and the web vault, desktop, and web browser extensions, coming soon to the mobile app as well, a feature that's been highly requested from the community. Now, the new username generator makes it easy to create a random username and adding extra level of security and privacy to your logins. Now, having a different username for each website you use makes it difficult or impossible for hackers to cross-reference lists of leaked data and find useful information about an individual. Now, the generator allows for creating a plus addressed email for email providers that support this feature, and it's a catch-all email address or a simple random word, plus addressing. Provides extra options from mailbox management and may also reveal any services that have sold email addresses to third parties. Now, other options include a generated email address at a specific domain for a catch-all email account or a simple random word and number to be used as a non-email username. Now, Bitwarden is must need for your business. It's fully customizable and adapts to your business needs. And you use Bitwarden Send because it's a fully encrypted method to actually transmit sensitive information, whether it be text or files. You can generate unique and secure passwords for every site with enterprise grade security. That's GDPR, CCPA, HIPAA, and SOC 2 compliant. And their end-to-end encrypted vault helps mitigate phishing attacks as well. Now, their team's organization option is $3 a month per user. Share private data securely with coworkers across departments or the entire company. Enterprises can use Bitwarden's enterprise organization plan for just $5 a month per user. Now, individuals can use their basic free account forever for an unlimited number of passwords or upgrade anytime to their premium account for less than $1 a month. Now, their family organization option gives up to 6 users premium features for only $3.33 a month. At Twit, we are fans of password managers. Bitwarden is the only open source cross-platform password manager that can be used at home, on the go, or at work, and is trusted by millions of individuals, teams, and organizations worldwide. Get started with a free trial of a Teams or enterprise plan, or get started for free across all devices as an individual user at bitwarden.com/twit. That's bitwarden.com/twit. And we thank Bitwarden for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, I want to get back to our guest, Dustin Childs. He's communication manager for Trend Micro ZDI. And we've been talking about Pwn to Own, just the evolution of the event, you know, people, what people are actually owning there, and what the, kind of you know, things they're winning, how it's impacting the industry and different organizations. But I do want to bring my co-host back in because they have some questions as well. I'll throw this to Chibert first. Chibert,
Dustin, I have a personal soapbox, and that personal soapbox is stop using the El Cheapo home firewalls for enterprise work at home. Well, I did a big set of articles in InfoWorld, and the difference between enterprise grade and consumer grade is a Grand Canyon. Well, in 2014, Dan Gear did an infamous keynote called "The Cybersecurity is Real Politic," and he basically said the new edge of the internet is the home. Pwn to own seems to be moving in, looking at consumer stuff. Is consumer firewalls and things like that something that you're going to focus in on one of these days?
Absolutely. That's the sort of thing that we're looking at, because I kind of agree with that. The edge of your enterprise is moving. There's so many of us, myself included, that are working from home these days. The edge of the network is here in my house, and I have some enterprise grade stuff, but most people don't. Most people go to wherever their local big box store is and pick up a $20 router or $50 router and think, oh, well, that works. That's sufficient. But as we've seen through some pwn to owns and as we see through other things, it really isn't, especially for enterprises that where you have remote workers connecting. So, yes, we're always looking at areas as like where can pwn to own show its biggest impact and what sort of research are we really looking to see? When we added printers, we had no idea what we were going to get. So it was just kind of like, well, let's add printers and see what happens. So the home-based firewalls, those small and medium-sized business things that are very relatively inexpensive and common for people to use in their home offices, that's definitely the sort of stuff that we want to look at in future events, because it has the potential for the most impact once we find them, fix those types of bugs.
Okay, so what kinds of impacts have you seen? You mentioned that some of these manufacturers and vendors are going back and fixing things. Has there actually been an impact on these really inexpensive home routers?
So on the routers, the only impact I can tell you that I personally have seen is that certain vendors have end-of-life routers rather than fix them. So that, I suppose, is one form of an impact. But when it comes to network attached storage devices, which were included in our last competition, we did have a big impact there because we exposed a bunch of bugs in Netatalk, and Western Digital and Synology and a bunch of other manufacturers have removed that functionality entirely because it was so ridden with security holes that it just really couldn't be fixed. It was archaic technology. They've moved on to something else. So that's the sort of impact that we're looking to have, where we can show the industry that it's like, hey, here's this bug that we happen to see in all of these devices, and here's a path that you can fix it. So hopefully we'll see more of that in the future too.
Fantastic. Thank you, Chiebert. I'm going to throw it over to Curtis as well. Curtis?
Thanks, Lou. I appreciate it. And I've got a couple of questions. One is based on something that you said earlier when you were talking about the rise of SCADA, which is, for people who aren't familiar, it's the operational technology for manufacturing and things like that. Are you seeing any push or any desire in looking at attacks that can move across the IT OT barriers and, you know, really become multi-phase, multi-vector attacks on an organization?
We haven't seen those types of attacks come in through pwn to own yet, but it would not surprise me if we see them in future events. We also get a lot of SCADA bugs just submitted to our program regularly. So that's definitely the sort of thing that we're looking for, but we haven't come across that yet in our program. And I do emphasize the word yet there because I kind of get where you're going with it. And yes, I think that is definitely something that the advanced threat actors are working on.
Well, it's this kind of thing that, you know, obviously some of the people in government and some of our think tanks are giving some real thought to. We've got some new NIST guidelines. We're getting all sorts of new regulations, guidelines. You know, are you seeing any impact in either direction? I mean, do you think that Pwn2Own and the things that you're discovering is having a positive impact on the people who are putting together these best practices documents, these guidelines? And are your researchers looking at those to figure out where they should be looking at weaknesses next?
So I do think that our program has some impact on things like NIST guidelines and other industry standards. We certainly try to highlight where there are commonalities in particular groups of products. For example, we can stay on SCADA. And there's a lot of SCADA products that just haven't implemented those defense in depth measures that we saw enterprise products put in a decade ago. So that's the sort of thing where we are trying to encourage that industry. That industry is also very new when it comes to dealing with independent researchers, and they're still kind of finding their way as to how to manage that relationship between these people around the world and, you know, their developers. So we can help in that area as well. It's definitely an area when we look at industry standards, the folks who report to us are definitely looking more at the products and where they can find the bugs than necessarily the industry standards and what they say should be protected. Now, when we sit down and write our rules for Pwn2Own, that is one thing that we do look at. It's like, okay, if widget maker X says it should be doing this according to this NIST guidelines, then we should test and see if that actually happens. So that's definitely the thing that we look at when we put together our Pwn2Owns. What is it supposed to be doing? What is it expected to be doing? And can that be circumvented? But as far as our researchers go, they're looking for any bugs anywhere they can find.
Well, I love the fact that they look, you know, wherever the research takes them. But we also know that not everyone, especially in government, understands how researchers work. And we've had some recent cases. Some of my favorites are where in, I believe it was Missouri, a journalist went to a publicly available source, got some information, and the governor threatened to have them investigated for criminal behavior. How are you finding that government and law enforcement is treating the research community in 2022? Is it basically a good relationship, or are there still lots of battles that you're having to fight on the legal side of things?
Surprisingly, we still are fighting some legal battles, although, I mean, ZDI has been around since 2005, and I can tell you that we're fighting fewer now than we have in the past. So that's good. There is improvement, but there's still a long ways to go, especially in certain communities. Like I said, the industrial control system and SCADA community, that's still relatively fresh. The devices community, where it comes to like these small home devices or printers, there's not a lot of experience with that, and the default is to make it adversarial. And part of our job as a bug bounty program, and you know, as an advocate for both, is to make sure that we get to a cooperative relationship rather than an adversarial one. We don't do too much with governments per se, but I can tell you that overall things are on the improvement, but we still have a long way to go.
Fantastic. So I do want to ask one more question here, because Curtis kind of drawn it out of me here. Is obviously there's a war going on in Eastern Europe. I know you talked about you didn't work a lot with governments, but how do you feel like the war in Ukraine is actually potentially shaping how organizations are treating some of the cyber threats out there? Or in fact, how do you think it's actually changing the landscape?
It's a very interesting question. It definitely is changing the landscape. And if anything, we've seen some of the sanctions put on Russia have actually had an impact on the ransomware that we see coming out of there. So that actually has slowed down a little bit. It's very interesting. Eastern European researchers just in general have a very mature community there where they work with each other. But that is definitely fractured now. So we're definitely seeing some researchers pull back, and we're seeing some more researchers come forward. It's a very fractured area right now. I wish I could say that there was a single trend that we could see positive or negative to help in this, but it's just definitely a thing that's very much in flux. And there are a lot of people who are displaced and just trying to do the best they can. So as far as enterprises and how they're attacking this and how they're combating any issues that they are seeing, I haven't seen a huge change from our perspective on that, but I'm also not very involved in our XDR area. So they probably have a different answer than I do.
Got it. Thank you, Dustin. Well, folks, unfortunately, time flies when you're having fun. Dustin, thank you so much for being here again. Lots of great information. Can you maybe give you the chance to tell the folks at home where they can find more about Trend Micro ZDI, maybe about the Pwn2Own event?
Sure. You can find all about us on ZeroDayInitiative.com. And you can see my blog there. I do a blog on patches and a lot of other things. We'll post a schedule there. You can follow us on Twitter at the ZDI. And we'll be live streaming some of our events next week, both on our YouTube channel and on Twitter. So if you've ever wanted to see what Pwn2Own looks like, you can tune in there and see an event take place live. And we'll see if stuff gets hacked and how much gets awarded.
Fantastic. Looking forward to it. Thanks again, Dustin.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well, folks, you've done it again. You sat through another hour of the Best Dang Enterprise podcast in the universe. So definitely tune your podcatcher to Twyatt. I want to make sure I thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially to these guys, my co-hosts here, starting with our very own Mr. Curtis Franklin. Curtis, you are a busy guy. What's coming up for you in the coming weeks? Where can people find you and all your work?
Well, they can always find pointers to what I'm doing on Twitter at KG4GWA. I write on the Omdia page at Dark Reading. I have a new piece of data coming out for our subscribers at Omdia.com. I do have the trip to RSA and to see the Splunk conference coming. And the week after I get back from Splunk, I'm doing a webinar on security and the software supply chain. I'm having a conversation with someone from ExtraHop, and I think it's going to be a great conversation. The link to register for that free webinar will be on the Omdia page at Dark Reading, and I'll also have it up on LinkedIn and on Twitter and other places. So would love it if some of the Twyatt viewers and readers could come over and ask questions. There will be time for a live Q&A at the end, so we'd love to see everyone there.
Thank you, Curtis. Looking forward to that. Well, folks, we also have to thank our very own Mr. Brian Chi as well. What's going on for you in the coming weeks, Brian? Where can people find you and get in touch with you? Ooh, Pwn2Own. Did you get one of those?
Anyway, Dustin, thank you so very much for the challenge coin. I love them. I had a great collection that kind of went up in smoke in the Pentagon. Bummer. Anyway, I do like Twitter, and that way I can trade barbs with Padre when he's in Rome. But anyway, the reality is I'm ADVNETLAB, Advanced Net Lab. I'd love to hear your ideas. And yes, some folks have been sending me some emails about with comments about previous episodes. Thank you very much. I am willing to try and use machine translators. So if you want to send a question to us or a comment to us in your native language, just be aware that I'm going to be using a machine translator. Love to hear you. Love to hear from you. Love to hear show ideas. If you'd like, you can also throw an email. I am Chebert, spelled C-H-E-E-B-E-R-T at twit.tv. You can also send email to twyatt at twit.tv, and that'll hit all the hosts. We would love to hear from you, and you can hear me ranting about silly things like, why did it take 4 months to get my solar panels remounted on my roof, the solar hot water panels, especially when an electric water heater can be as much as, you know, 20-25% of your electric usage in your home. And I was paying a lot of money. No, I'm not. So I'm much, much happier. Love to hear from you folks.
Thank you, Chebert. Well, we also have to thank you as well. You're that person who drops in each and every week to watch and to listen to our show to get your enterprise goodness. I want to make it easy for you to watch and listen and catch up on your enterprise and IT news. Go to our show page right now, twit.tv/twi. There it is. There you'll find all the amazing back episodes, the show notes, the co-host information, of course, the guest information, and of course, those links that we do during the show as well. But more importantly, next to those videos there, you'll get those helpful subscribe and download links. Support the show by getting your audio version or the video version of your choice. Listen on any one of your devices or any one of your podcast applications, because we're on all of them. Definitely subscribe and support the show. You could also support the show. You may have heard, that's right, Club Twit. It's a members-only ad-free podcast service with a bonus Twit Plus feed that you can't get anywhere else, and it's only $7 a month. That's right. There are a lot of great things about Club Twit. One of them is the exclusive access to the members-only Discord server. Lots of awesome channels in there. Chat with hosts, producers, discussion channels. Plus, there's also special events. One coming up very soon that I'm looking forward to. Lots of fun discussions. Now join Club Twit. Be part of that movement. Be part of the fun by just going to twit.tv/Club Twit. Now, Club Twit now offers corporate group plans as well. It's a great way to give your team access to the Ad-Free Tech podcast. And the plans start with 5 members at a discounted rate of $6 each per month. And you can add as many seats as you like. And this is really a great way for your IT department or your developers, your salespeople, your tech teams to stay on top and stay up to date with the access to all of our podcasts. And just like that regular membership that we talked about, they can join the Twit Discord server and they get that Twit Plus bonus feed as well. Now, after you subscribe and you're part of the, actually maybe even part of the Club Twit, you can press your family members, your coworkers, whoever, friends, with the gift of Twiit. We talk about a lot of fun tech topics on this show, and I can guarantee they will find it fun and interesting as well. So definitely ask them to subscribe and share it with them. Now, if you've already subscribed and you're available on Fridays at 1:30 p.m. Pacific time, we do this show live. That's right. Come see the behind the scenes. Come see how the pizza's made, all that fun stuff. It's go to live.twit.tv. That's right. That's the website. Go there right now. There's all the streams on there, whether it's YouTube or whatnot. Check that out. We're doing this live right now. But if you're going to watch the show live, you might as well jump into the infamous IRC channel as well. There's a lot of infamous characters in there that are there each and every week, but we got some new ones that come in. We have some great conversations. We have some great questions that come up from there. So I really love everybody that's in there. So I'd say join it and be part of that fun as well at irc.twit.tv. Now, definitely hit me up on Twitter at twitter.com/LouMM. There I post all my enterprise tidbits. I post what I'm doing during my normal work week at Microsoft. Plus, I get great direct messages from people like you. So definitely keep sending them to me. Just like Chibert said, we get some really great emails and messages about past shows, about what they like, what they disliked. We love that. So please reach out to us and let us know how you feel or what you want more of, that kind of thing. So definitely hit us up there. Plus, if you want to know what's going on in my work week, definitely check out developers.microsoft.com/office. There we post all the latest and greatest ways you can make Office more customizable to you. Also, Build's coming up. That's right. Microsoft Build's coming up at the end of the month here, a couple weeks. Check that out because we're going to have a lot of fun stuff that we're debuting there. We're going to talk a lot about some new stuff that's coming up. So look out for that as well. You can join it. A lot of live streams and going on there. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially to Leo and Lisa. They continue to support This Week in Enterprise Tech each and every week, and we couldn't do the show without them. So thank you for all their support over the years. I want to thank all the staff and engineers at Twit. I also want to thank Mr. Brian G. He's not only our co-host today, but he's all the time. And he's also our tireless producer as well. He does all the show bookings and the plannings for the show. And we really couldn't do the show without him. So Chibert, thank you for all your support over the years. We couldn't do without you. And of course, before we sign out, we have to thank our editor for today. He's the guy who makes us look good after the fact. He cuts out all the junk that we make, mistakes that we made, all that stuff. Anthony, thank you for your support. And of course, we also have to thank our technical director for today as well. He's the talented Mr. Ant Pruitt. He does a fabulous show here on the network called Hands On Photography. I listen to it every week. I learn something new. It's the reason why I still use my digital camera rather than my phone. I love hearing about it. Ant, what's going on this week on Hands On Photography?
Well, sir, this week I sat down and went through some listener and viewer email and did a little bit of feedback, and we talked about some computers, some hardware for photography and video editing, because people can spend a lot of money and still not really get what they need, or they can't spend enough. So we try to talk about that balance. So check us out, twit.tv/hop.
Once you start, you can't stop. You just got to keep buying stuff. I know that for
facts.
Me, especially with cameras. Definitely check that out. Maybe it'll stop my my curb there. Well, thank you, everybody. Until next time, I'm Louis Maresca, just reminding you, if you want to know what's going on in the Enterprise, just keep quiet.
Hey, I'm Rod Pyle, editor of Ad Astra magazine, and each week I'm joined by Tarek Malik, the editor-in-chief over at space.com, in our new This Week in Space podcast. Every Friday, Tarek and I take a deep dive into the stories that define the new space age. What's NASA up to? When will Americans once again set foot on the moon? And how about those samples from the Perseverance rover? When are those coming home? What the heck has Elon Musk done now? In addition to all the latest and greatest in space exploration, we'll take an occasional look at bits of spaceflight history that you probably never heard of, and all with an eye towards having a good time along the way. Check us out in your favorite podcatcher.